105 DGS on KMOX. What we got coming up later? Michael Calhoun's going to join us in a few minutes, talk about the RFT being sold. Our pal Ricky Horton will be with us. Chet's going to call in and talk about the jury instructions in the Donald Trump case, which is an attorney, I can tell you, is kind of everything. Dave Murray will talk about the weather. And then at 4 p.m., Rabbi Shmuel Greenwald from the Priest and Rabbi has asked to come in and talk about what's going on in Gaza and Israel. So pretty full show. Speaking of controversies, the whole tipping thing, what about this? I thought about this over the weekend. What if the rule is if when I order and you hand me my food, I'm standing up, no tip.
So fast casual.
Okay. Yeah. I like that.
You know, if you bring me something or if you take my order and I'm sitting down and you bring me something, tip. But if I'm just standing there and I tell you I want a number three and you hand it to me.
Man, I always just feel
like. Is that unfair?
No, I don't think that's unfair at all. I always feel like that, you know, the Supreme Court pornography thing when I think about tipping. It's like, I feel like in my head, I can't define what I think is like tip worthy, but I know it when I see it. Like, I know the gut feeling when they flip the iPad around and there's a tip line. And I know whether I should. Like, I was asked to tip in the Starbucks drive-thru the other day. And immediately, I mean, I don't, a lot of times I'll hit the, like, $1 or whatever button. I hit none. I was like, I'm going through the drive-thru. You're handing it out the window to me.
But you're sitting.
But I'm sitting. Oh, that's interesting. Now I do actually, my car has actually the wheels, the engine fell out.
Maybe so you're not sitting.
The engine fell out, so it is a Flintstone-style car that I'm running.
Starbucks is an interesting one, because really what's the difference between getting Hardee's and getting Starbucks?
Not much. Someone's
like,
making
it. Why does one of those things require a tip and the other one does?
But
is
also,
a drink somehow harder to make?
Well, that's the thing. I always tip a bartender.
Yeah.
Right.
And a barista at a coffee shop isn't actually that much different than a bartender.
That's
They're
both
mixing drinks in specific and precise ways. So even though you're going
through
the drive-thru.
There are two things that I don't like about it. One, I don't like it. And like Andrew said, you know when you feel the emotion. Mm-hmm. I don't like it when it's purely shame-based. Like, well, you just turned the iPad around to me, and I'm going to turn it back around to you, and you're going to see that I said none, and I'm too big a punk, so I'm going to say 20, 25% on my whatever package I just bought. But then the other thing is, I don't think it's fair when I am clearly making up for what your employer is not paying you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't think that's fair.
Yeah.
With wait staff, it's forever been that they don't make as much hourly because they get tipped, and that's just something that we've all pinky locked that we're going to, you know, when someone waits on us, we're going to give them a tip. But basically, if someone does a service for me, I'll tip people who don't expect to be tipped if they go above and beyond or they do something that I think, I'm so glad they did that because I would not want to do that. I will give them money.
I also think it's interesting the European style has become more and more, not popular, but it's become more and more known to Americans now that through social media and everybody being connected all the time. And every so often you'll see on Twitter like a European traveling to America and discovering that like in Europe and like, you know, those countries, you pay the waiters more and then there's no tipping. Like you don't tip in, you know, a European country, but the waiters are also paid a more natural wage. And it does, I guess, kind of beg the question that everyone who's worked food service asks after a rough tip night, which is like, yeah, why don't we do that? Why are we passing on, you're going to count on kindness of strangers to make your living wage? Like, no, why don't I get paid more by the company that I work for?
Yeah, I get that. But I think there are a lot of servers out there who wouldn't want to see a change because they're able to make so much.
Able to do their job really well and hustle.
And that is for sure. There are places that people work that either it's just like you work in a big tipping city or an affluent area or it's a nice restaurant or bar or whatever where people leave huge tips that would probably be harmed by. I wonder which it is. I wonder, like, if you polled 1,000 random food service people, I wonder if most people would be like, yeah, we got to get rid of tipping and just pay me more. Or if they end up making more on tips, because a lot of people do very well with tips. But I wonder if tips are going to go down because we see this nationwide kind of backlash.
I think people have tipping fatigue.
I think it could have a backlash. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, back to the Starbucks thing. Sorry, I keep dragging out this subject, Dave. But Starbucks, I'm pretty sure you'd make a normal wage. I don't think they're paying them $3 an hour like a server is. So then, what is the difference between that and fast food?
Have they always had to? Because I feel like that was a new thing. I don't go to Starbucks much.
It used to be that you couldn't. It used to be when you paid with a credit card, they didn't really ever ask you to tip. And now I think they've changed that.
Yeah, okay. Because I felt like I'd never been asked inside or out of a Starbucks to, or any coffee shop really, to tip like on a screen. Sorry.
No, it's fine. With Wheels Out, the show has a different feel, and there's a lot of just from one topic to another. To do that, I wanted to talk about something, and this is going to be a little bit patting myself on the back, like, hey, look how reasonable I am. You guys should be more like me. So I'm just going to acknowledge that up front. But I can't stand Trump. Just personally, I think he's a bad person. But the other day, he was being interviewed by a guy who was talking about contraception. And he said, I would be open to putting restrictions on contraception. And the guy said, like, the day after pill. And something else. Anyway, long and short of it is, people went crazy because the person who could be the next president said he might put restrictions on what birth control women could take. And I think that would be a bridge too far. And I think he knows that because he and his campaign came out very quickly and cleaned it up and said, no, it was an awkward question and an awkward conversation. And never would Mr. Trump try to restrict contraception. And me being someone who can't stand the man, who can't wait until I no longer have to hear his name or see his face, accepted it. Okay, you tell me that it was a faux pas or is a misunderstanding, and you correct it, and you tell me what you really think. Okay, yeah. Moving on. I think that's the way we should be.
Yeah, we don't give enough grace to people. I've been thinking about that word a lot lately. We don't give enough grace to people just because we don't like them, right? Like, even you can not like Donald Trump, but still accept there's a chance that he misspoke or, you know, flubbed a word or didn't understand a question if it was phrased strangely or whatever. And, you know, then people will hang on to that thing that he said, even if he said, like, oh, you know what? I really didn't say that right. What I meant to say was something more like this. I didn't really understand the question when it was asked and presented in a way that I didn't really follow. I kind of zoned out or whatever. And I just think we're not kind enough to each other for making like very minor and easily made mistakes like that.
I mean, and I think it's also for me personally that if I don't let people do that, then they're not going to let me do that. And fair enough, because I misspeak. Sometimes I just say the wrong word. Sometimes I misunderstood what you said, and I answer a question I thought that you asked and you didn't. And then sometimes I'll say things and later think, that's not what you think. Why would you say that? Mm-hmm. And I want the ability to come back and correct the record and have people take me at my word. Mm-hmm. And so if I'm going to ask whatever I ask people to do for me, I should be willing to do for them.
Mm-hmm. That's very nice of you, Dave. I will say in this case, I'm a little less likely to be like, oh, Trump, he misspoke. Because this is the guy that set up the court that overturned Roe v. Wade. And he also like lies all the time. Sorry to the Trump supporters listening right now who are getting mad at me, but he has a hard time keeping his story straight. So for me, his word doesn't mean a lot as far as like, oh, take me at my word on this one. Do you get what I'm saying?
She's got a good point. Also, she's got a pretty good point on this one.
Climate change is now come home to roost. We all care about things when they invade our little gardens that we are tilling and weeding and keeping good care of. And I just found out that that turbulence is up 55% because of climate change.
Oh, wow.
And if you are a climate change denier, then you don't believe anything about it. But if you are open to that there is man-made climate change, and you, like me, are a very nervous flyer, and you hate turbulence, even though you know you probably aren't going to get knocked out of the air, although they just had that happen in Singapore pretty badly, that in the last 40 years, clear air turbulence and really severe turbulence, the kind that injures people, is up 55%. And they say that 55% is up solely because of climate change, because the planes are better, our science is better, our understanding of the currents and the rivers of air that flow up in the jet stream. We know so much more about that than we did 40 years ago. And yet we can't stay out of the turbulence because of the heat changes. And so.
Wow, that's really interesting.
Yeah.
And makes a lot of sense now that you bring up the fact that, yeah, like we have pilots who are trained to avoid that kind of stuff. And yet we're still hitting it.
Yeah, better technology than we've ever had.
Wow, that's scary. Yeah.
Some of the Cardinals don't like the new City Connect jerseys.
Are they speaking out about it?
Yeah, Contreras was the most outspoken, who said, like, they tried too hard.
Oh, I like the City Connect jerseys.
I think they're great.
They did too much.
I was going to ask you guys, like, where do we land on it as a unit? How do we feel? I think they're pretty cool. Are you were kind of going back and forth, I think, Dave, right? Or
I love the red.
Putting words in your mouth.
No, I love the red. And I love the look, the overall, like when I see someone from 20 feet away, I love it. But
the detail when you get
more
up close. Yeah.
But I know these are supposed, like someone, one of the Cardinals, I forget which one it was, so I won't just say a name because I'll get it wrong. But one of the Cardinals was like, I wanted it to be crazy. I wanted it to be way, way out there. Sort of like the Boston, I guess.
Okay.
The blue and the yellow.
Yeah.
I did not. You guys have made a bunch of t-shirts with me. What's my rule? Keep it simple. Keep it basic. Keep it something that you'll actually wear. Not something that you get a stupid looking t-shirt at an event and you go like, oh, thanks, and you'll never wear it again because it's an ugly, stupid t-shirt.
Right.
I feel the same way about those jerseys. Like, it's a little too much for me, little too much detail in it, but I love the overall look.
What I don't like is the STL hats. I'm not a fan of
that. A lot of people not fans of that.
To me, it's just like, why does it say STL? But I like the Lou jersey. I don't know. I'm weird.
What are the hats? I'm sorry.
They're just red hats that just say STL.
Oh, and it's got like the kind of like bubbly, old-timey kind of font. Yeah, I saw those. Yeah, I thought the same thing. I caught them when I was walking out. I guess yesterday when we were leaving, I saw them. And I was like,
those are not my
So
fave.
What do you think of the Endless Crews? Have you seen these? This is becoming a really big deal. So these are about half the size of a normal cruise ship, 300 to 500 people, and they give you really good rates as low as like $30,000, $40,000 per person per year. And they go on these cruises. Like there's this one that just came out that will cruise literally for 15 years, and then they'll change the ship because the ship needs to be completely refitted, but you can cruise this. And what they do is they do it so that they're always in, pardon me, they're always in warm weather. Hmm. So they'll go from the northern hemisphere to the southern hemisphere. You're always in the very best weather, and you have a cabin, and you can own it or you can rent it. But people more, like they had 3,000 cabins available, and 2,800 are already sold.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's great for cruise people. And if
you're a cruise person,
you're in paradise. I've never been on a cruise. I've never had like a really strong desire to do it. I think I would feel kind of claustrophobic. And being on an endless one does not sound great to me. But
anything that starts with endless.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
Like, no,
I don't
thank you. Unless it's endless shrimp from Red Lobster. That's a different. I mean,
you will not let this go.
It took down a brand. Yes, what can I say? But no, it doesn't sound super appealing to me. And if you had that much, what did you say? It costs like $30,000 a year or
Minimum.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you could probably do your own sailboat type of thing at that point, right?
I don't know. I think that's the whole key to it is that it's supposedly cheaper than living in a lot of homes and much cheaper than having your own boat. And everything's included but your liquor. And yeah, you could live pretty frugally. Welcome back, guys. DGS 224. Michael Calhoun joins us from the newsroom. So big news in St. Louis. The Riverfront Times has been sold. As I understand it from just listening to your reporting, we don't really know what's going to happen, right? We don't know what it's going to turn into.
No, but it seems like it's turning into something because there's no staff left. The building's empty.
Yeah, they're going to do something that doesn't involve the people who are there.
Yeah, which is, you know, it leads to a number of questions. We don't know who the buyer is, what their intentions are, but it kind of reminds me potentially of, you know, when a retailer goes bust and their trademarks get sold and somebody's like, well, we'll just license the Toys R Us or Bed Bath & Beyond name, even though we have nothing to do with the original. I wonder if that's maybe potentially what's at play here. Somebody wanted that brand name and the built-in audience. Or if they've got just another plan for what they want to do with the publication, or maybe it is over. Who knows? But yesterday, all of the staff at the Riverfront Times, after 47 years, they got the notice that they're all let go and that the publication had been sold by the local owners to this mystery person.
End of an era, man. So I'm from Illinois. So when I showed up in St. Louis, I immediately didn't feel cool enough to be here. And then it was that era of the RFT, and I didn't feel cool enough to read it. I felt like I didn't understand like all the clubs and all the inside jokes, and I'm just some, you know, hayseed from Illinois. And then I got to be somewhat friends with Ray, you know, who owned it for all those decades. And it's sad. The end of an era.
Well, and it's something that helps to cultivate, you know, St. Louis has such a strong identity, and you go on social media and we've got memes about St. Louis.
Sure.
The culture is so strong. And part of that is having these institutions like the Riverfront Times that can identify, you know, and help build, you know, Mike Shannon calls into something that's larger than life. You know, all of the just so many moments where the Riverfront Times would make you laugh or roll your eyes, or, you know, they have the perfect sarcastic take on something.
They were a thing. You got to give it to them.
Yeah.
Have you talked to the people? Was it a shock?
It was a shock. I talked with, first, I was able to get on the phone the founder, Ray Hartman, along with Mark Vittert, who founded this in 1977. It was originally a downtown-centric publication.
Didn't know that.
And they eventually mutated into a lot of people, I think, remembered the RFT because of the racy advertisements.
Sure do.
And the classifieds. But Ray Hartman told me he thought it was another offering that put the RFT on the map.
The big thing was we were the only place you could find live music. None of the dailies, nobody else really provided listings of live music and bars. We cross-referenced the bands, and that was a big thing.
Which to me kind of talks to the state of journalism today. Everybody's got their own opinion as to what's happened to newspapers and other media outlets. But think about it. If you wanted to see a band or know what was on TV or buy a car or find a job or, you know, anything, you had to get the paper.
Yeah.
And so it wasn't just the journalism that was a part of this product. As he mentioned, it was the fact that you could look up and see what bands were playing that night, and it was a novel concept.
I have wide enough shoulders, I can admit it. They had a section where it was like, you were at AJ's, and you were wearing a sweater vest, and we missed each other. I read every single one, and it was never about a guy with thinning mullet that looked like the Crypt Keeper. So,
Michael, it was really interesting to me to just see so many media people coming out and kind of paying tribute to the RFT in the past 24 hours.
Yeah, well, because, well, first of all, so many people have gone through the RFT. It was the first stop for so many. You know, Sarah Fenske is somebody who worked at the RFT and then went on, worked in other places in St. Louis, but went on to be the editor of LA Weekly, the big alt weekly publication in Los Angeles, and coming back. And so you also have to take a look at the last few years of the RFT. And we can talk about, you know, the irreverent past of the publication, but the last few years, it's kind of been a scoop machine, especially on stories that haven't been covered elsewhere, whether it's they've been overlooked or other, you know, newsrooms are more short-staffed than they've been, so they haven't been able to. But whatever the reason, the RFT the last few years has made a lot of moves and broken a lot of news and turned a lot of heads, to the point that it was interesting yesterday that Ryan Kroll, one of those reporters who's just always coming out with a scoop, tweeted, quote, "An elected city official just called to say he was feeling great to hear today's news."
Wow.
About the RFT.
Well, RIP the RFT, decades of fun and very interesting journalism.
And here's what Sarah Fenske had to say, who was the executive editor who was also laid off yesterday, in response to that unnamed city official.
You know, we certainly had people who hated what we were doing, and I've heard from some of those people as well. They can dance on our grave, and, you know, they get that. But there are so many people that have understood that the RFT covered stories in this town that nobody else covered, and we covered it aggressively.
Welcome back, guys. DGS, time to talk to our pal Ricky Horton. Hey, Rick.
Hey, Dave. How are you today?
Boy, it's a lot more fun when you win, isn't it?
It is very fun. In fact, it's making my off day a lot better, too, because I can just enjoy it.
Yeah.
And not only winning yesterday, but really winning two games yesterday, because you had the continuation of the game the night before, and so it was a good way to start the day. And there's so many things going well. And, you know, I know a lot of folks still have kind of a negative persistence about the Cardinals, but I feel like they're starting to change some minds.
All right, I'm going to go out on a limb here, and I'll be accused of being a homer, but I have a good feeling about this team. Now, a month from now, people may be making fun of me and see, we told you so. Yeah. I have a good feeling about the team.
Yeah, and I do too. I actually said this. In fact, I think we talked about this a couple weeks ago. I think I made the comment, it is possible for the Cardinals to be in first place by the All-Star break, and I'm not predicting that. I'm not saying that, but I just think, you know, if once you start hitting, things can change quickly and teams can slide quickly. And there are some injuries going on, too, with other teams in the division. Now, I'm not saying I'm ready to print World Series tickets, but I just think things are a lot more positive than they were 2 weeks ago.
So I need you to talk me off the ledge about something.
Yeah.
Oh, first of all, you and John, great call on the Newt Bar play. That was really exciting. I was driving to see my mom in the nursing home, listening on KMOX. It was really great call. You guys do a great job. That one was especially fun.
Thank you. Thank you. It was fun.
So here's my beef. If Newt doesn't make that catch, that game-saving catch, I was screaming, like, put in Kittredge, put in Helsley.
Yeah.
I get it. They already pitched once today. But I can't believe that an elite athlete like these guys can't throw 10 pitches at 1 p.m. and then 10 pitches at 4 p.m. And it was just making me crazy.
Well, I'll be glad to talk to you off the ledge, but let me ask you first, is there a net below where the ledge you're on? I mean, is there a big net below?
I could fall one step and be okay.
Okay, so I might push you instead of helping you off the ledge. I guess that's where I was going with it. So here's the deal. What you're doing, and I understand what you're saying makes sense. It's really taking the long view of, you know, it's an opportunity for a guy to get hurt if you throw twice in one day. I'm not saying they're not finely tuned machines and they're, you know, they should be able to withstand some things, but you are taking a chance. Every starting pitcher takes a chance with every pitch after 90 pitches. Should it be that way? That's a different question, but that's where we are right now. And I think the same is true of relievers, and they're learning a lot about kind of how to make sure that you've got Kittredge for the long haul, which we need. He's been so good. And so my heart wants him there, like yours, but I think, you know, the common sense is in the baseball world right now is let's not risk it. And the other thing you do, Dave, is you lengthen your bullpen by giving experience to other guys to be in that kind of – and I think John King's done well. I think Nick Robertson's done well. I mean, there's some other weapons now perhaps that are brewing, including Kyle Leahy. He also pitched well.
Yeah, I think I felt like I was taking a really short view because I was thinking this is so important if we can sweep the Orioles. Like, this is going, you know, you think back to, I forget what win it was, but when the Blues won the Cup and they were in last place and they had a win. The Blues players, the Blues fans out there are screaming at me right now because they know exactly who it was. But there was that one win that we always look back to, and I thought this could be that time when you sweep the Orioles and then you start playing better ball.
But here's what I would say. Don't you think you're going to have that same feeling in the seventh inning when the Cubs are in town on Friday and on Saturday night when you play the Cubs and on Sunday when you play the Cubs and on Monday when you play the Reds and on Tuesday? I mean, that's the problem is every game feels that way. And I feel like, you know, now that you're starting to play division games and the Cardinals are, what, five games out, I feel like it's nice to have everybody full strength, too. So I understand it, though. I get it. But I feel like, sometimes you just have to roll the dice a bit with other guys.
Rick, is that a fairly recent thing? Like, would Bruce Sutter have just come back out had he closed the first game yesterday?
There's no question Bruce Sutter would have come back out. But pitchers, and that's not even recent. But I would say it's not recent, but I would say 30 years ago, pitchers would have come back. And I pitched two games a day many times. But it was a different thing because guys weren't throwing 100% max effort, which is what they do now. Pitchers are trained to throw the ball as hard as they can and make it spin as much as they can. And that is, you know, you're on the edge in terms of what you're physically doing. And we were trained to back off about 10% and pitch for the long haul. Mm-hmm. And so it's a very different way of training. And I think that's why they do that now.
You know, also what I love, I was talking to you the other day about an article I saw that said, as Goldie goes, so go the Cardinals, which is a lot of pressure to put on a human being. But
right.
He's been better. Arenado's been better. Our OGs, our studs have been better. But this really has been fueled by the young guys.
It has. Here's what I think has happened with the OGs is it's hard to watch those guys fail so badly. I mean, they really struggle, both of them, for a bit, especially Goldie. I mean, not hard to draw that conclusion. And when your main guy's struggling and you know that he's twice as good as you or let's say 20% better than you, and he's been an MVP, you haven't, and he's struggling, it kind of has an effect on you. And I think a negative mindset almost, and it creeps in to where you think, well, if Goldie can't hit this guy, I can't hit this
yeah.
guy. So I do think that happens.
Yeah, probably so. So talk to me about the Cubs. How are they? What's the series shaping up like?
Well, we're going to face a really interesting I can't even say his name right. Imaginaga, that's not right. I'm not saying it right. But the Japanese pitcher is pitching Friday, and he has been lights out. Got an ERA of under one. And we actually saw him in Mesa. The Cardinals actually hit him a little bit, but he's been one of the best pitchers in the National League. So that's going to be tough. But a lot of the same kind of names with the Cubs. They've had some injuries. They had some guys not playing as well. But, you know, Ian Happ kills the Cardinals. And, the Cubs and Cardinals is always fun. And it's going to be rocking this weekend.
Yeah, wouldn't you say with the Cubs and Cardinals, it really doesn't matter if one of the teams was on top and one was on bottom. You just really don't know.
No, you really don't, and that's kind of the fun of it. It's always been true, hasn't it? I mean, that goes back a long time with this rivalry, and it's a fun rivalry, and I think it's going to be great. By the way, Imanaga is his name. It's Shoto Imanaga, and he might be worth the price of admission, by the way, just by himself on Friday night. But there are many times I can remember the Cardinals being swept by the Cubs when the Cardinals were better, and vice versa. So you just never know what's going to happen.
So, Rick, the rumor mill is that Detroit may be interested in dealing Jack Flaherty. I know as a person, you'd welcome him back with open arms and shake his hand. How about as a player?
Well, I think right now he'd be better than where we are with our fifth option right now. I don't think there's any question about that. Our fifth option is not, you know, we're looking. I mean, I think when I say we're looking, they're looking. And I don't think they're 100% sure which direction they want to go. And I think you entertain any option out there that makes you better at this point, because the most vulnerable spot on the team right now, and we always want more bats and we always want more of that, but I think more relief pitching is coming, so I'm not worried about that. But I think the problem is starter number five, and it's going to be a problem for about a month or so. So if you got a better solution, I'd be all ears.
And Rick, how it's a problem, obviously. How big a problem, or how surprising is it that we don't have a go-to guy? Like if Mason Wynn were still in AAA and our shortstop got hurt, you go like, oh, Mason Wynn, he's going to be great, bring him up. How troubling is it that we don't have that guy as a pitcher?
It is troubling. It really is troubling. And it's surprising. The Cardinals have had a fair number of number one round picks that have done okay, but they're not kind of ready to make that next step. I think if you talk to the baseball people, everybody would say AAA, the level of AAA play is not what it was 20 years ago. It's kind of down. And part of the reason it's down is you're not keeping older pitchers around in AAA and paying them a lot of money to be that extra guy.
Yeah.
You're saving money on that. So what you're doing is you're just bringing up these younger guys who have better stuff, but they're not ready to be in the big leagues. And then you get the other part is you don't want to retard their development either by bringing them up and then kind of maybe exposing them too early.
All right, buddy. Enjoy your day off, pal.
All right. Thanks, Dave. Appreciate it, my friend.
251 DTS. Andrew just made the comment off the air that the show's been way too smart and interesting, so we should dumb it up. So let's do that. So yesterday we went to the ball game, courtesy of our buddy Ben Boyd. No, first of all, the food. So we're in a little suite. Thanks again, Ben. You're the man. And you just eat different. And
yeah, you
like,
sure do.
Here is my plate yesterday. I had a bratwurst, pasta salad, Caesar salad, and a double brownie. And I'm like, this is not a normal meal that humans eat. Like, you would never be like, honey, what's for dinner? Like, well,
a bratwurst, some nachos, and two brownies.
Yeah, like don't forget the nachos, Dave.
Like the Peanuts Thanksgiving or something. So, yeah, and then when they're throwing out the first pitch, you know, and they always have dignitaries or someone from the UFC or Kevin Wheeler, and it was Garfield. If you don't know this, Andrew is a Garf boy. He is deeply into Garfield. I know. But you were struggling because Garfield wasn't quite up to your expectations.
Okay, so first of all, it was really incredible seeing Garfield out there. I didn't know he was going to be there. I got really, really excited. I pointed him out to you guys, and Dave goes, "Where?" And I was like,
"Which one's Garfield?"
I know. I honestly felt so stupid. He goes, "Look at the Garfield," and I'm looking at every human. I'm like, "Nope, nope,
I'm
nope."
I'm not seeing a Garfield. I'm like, "He's the big orange cat." You were like, "Oh yeah, right. I guess Garfield." But I got super excited. But the thing is, I didn't know. I wasn't so sure if, and obviously, I know that that's not the real Garfield. It's one of Garfield's helpers. Garfield's right. Very busy.
Sure.
But I didn't know, I don't think he was really given, I don't think he understood the role, right? I don't think he embodied the character.
A little too animated? A little too Fred Bird?
Well, he was, first of all, he and Fred Bird were getting along, which, I'm sorry, Garfield would not like Fred Bird. I like Fred Bird, everybody likes Fred Bird, but Garfield would hate Fred Bird. Fred Bird is much more of an Odie. Now, Fred Bird and Odie would get along just fine. Fred Bird and John would get along. John would think he was cute and charming. But Garfield would be so done with his whole shtick, Fred Bird's whole thing, he'd be like, get out of here, or I'm going to knock your block off. Because he talks like that a lot because he's from the 80s.
Sure.
And so I just felt like their whole thing of like, we're buddies and we're friends and we're throwing to each other. And it's like you don't treat Garfield like a mascot, right? Garfield is not a mascot. Oh. Garfield is a fleshed out character with his own thoughts, feelings, and opinions that are well documented and easily reproduced. And I just
think
you're
really offending Fred Bird right now.
Well, Fred Bird is a character of his own, right? They are not the same type of character.
Garfield is woke now is what I'm hearing.
Really?
Well, I mean, he's not knocking anybody's block off. He's getting along with Fred Bird.
Yeah. That was a woke Garfield. And Garfield, you know what? Garfield is not woke, okay? Garfield is actually not woke. He will never go broke because he's not woke. He kind of resists the woke ideology in a lot of ways if you think about it.
And what's the thing about ruining a guy's drink?
So this is actually, my dad brought it up last night, so I remembered it. But this was actually on the game that I went to on Monday evening with him. And so I'm crammed in there. I had to sit in the seats. And, you know, the guy next to me was big. I'm a slightly bigger guy. You know how it is. So I'm, like, scrunched in. So I kind of lean over like this to my dad and his buddy Chuck that we went with. And I put my kind of arm around the back of the seat that Chuck's on. And my elbow is, I don't realize this, but it's all the way in this guy's beer.
Oh, no.
My elbow is in the beer. Like, the beer cup is...
And you didn't notice this.
And I didn't notice this at all.
Might want to see a doctor.
Until he says something that's like, hey, buddy, you mind if I get my beer? And I was like, ah, man, I'm so sorry. And he was like, you know, and he's like looking at it like, what am I supposed to do with this? We were in the National Car Rental Club.
So you can get another free beer.
It's an all-inclusive. Because my first thought was like, I should like give this guy like a five out of my wallet or whatever. Just be like, hey, sorry, next one.
Yeah, that'll buy a beer at the ball game.
I don't know what things cost. I have no cost. But I'm
He's
like...
He's getting into sweets, Dave, okay? He doesn't have to worry about
the cost
of beers.
But then I was like, wait a minute. I don't care. Get over it. If I ruined your beer, go get another beer.
You're wrong about every part of this.
No, go get another. It's free.
Be a man. If you put your elbow in another man's beer, you buy him another beer.
It was
you
free.
Don't give him a nickel.
It was free. It's an all-inclusive club.
Well, then go up and get it for him and bring it back to him.
I don't know him. I don't know what he wants.
Shake his hand.